Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, our series of debates for the general election continue, and we hear from the candidates running for state senate in the Cape and Islands District. The district includes the towns of Barnstable, Brewster, Chatham, Dennis, Eastham, Harwich, Orleans, Provincetown, Truro, Wellfleet, and Yarmouth, and the counties of Dukes and Nantucket. Reminder of our format, we give the candidates up to 2 minutes to answer questions on issues and up to 2 minutes for closing comments at the end, and we'll alternate who answers first. If you have a question, an issue question directed to all candidates, you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org, or give us a call at 866-999-4626. Our candidates, Julian Sear, he's a Democrat in the race.
Good morning.
Julian. Christopher Lozon's the Republican candidate. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Joe Vaness is the Independent candidate. Hi, Joe.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. All right. We're going to start, Julian Sear, with you. Affordable housing on the minds of many, including Casey, who says, how are you going to preserve our year-round housing stock and specifically protect it from being bought by corporations and used in a commercial way?
So this is top of mind for me and really has been when I first ran for this office in 2016, right? If you look at what's been happening across this region, we've had a housing crisis for 20 years. The pandemic really put that problem on steroids, right? In the 8 years that I've been state senator, we've had housing prices double. It's at the point where Cape Codders of our generation here, right? You have three younger Islanders, Cape Codders here, you know, debating this morning. If you don't own a home yet, you're probably not going to be able to buy a home here, right? Median home price, before the median home price in Truro, a household has to make, my hometown, has to make $400,000 a year, right? So we have been working on this issue doggedly since I got into office, but especially in the last several years. And what we did is we went around and we had, you know, we went to our towns and we said, hey, look, what are the tools that you wish that you have, right, that you currently can't execute under existing state law? And so we went to Provincetown and to the Vineyard and to Nantucket and to Chatham and Orleans and Barnstable and came up with a whole toolkit of policies that our towns were asking us to bring forward. We put that together in a package called a seasonal communities designation. We got Governor Healey on board. She filed it in the Affordable Homes Act. The House passed it. The Senate expanded it further. This is now game changer policy for Cape Codders and Islanders. The ability for towns to have year-round deed restrictions, the ability for towns to provide housing for municipal workers. I was just on Nantucket yesterday listening to two DPW workers of their staff of about 30 who were homeless this summer, right? So this is a major, very significant accomplishment. I'm very proud of this. This has been something we did in listening to our towns. We still have work to do here, particularly with a transfer fee on luxury real estate. This is something that 12 of the 19 communities in the district, a vast majority of them, have passed, have taken votes at town meeting to support a transfer fee. We got pretty close in getting this done, and I'm going to be coming back doggedly to get this done. This is a real priority, especially for the islands.
Thank you. Christopher Lozon, same question.
Yeah, so the incumbent and myself, I mean, we take different approaches to this. You know, I don't think you solve the housing problem by increasing taxes and, you know, overtaxing an already overtaxed population. You know, I'd be advocating for a review and change of statewide housing policies. You know, Chapter 40B specifically, I don't think has worked as intended. And I think that's the case with a lot of statewide policies. You know, they're put in place maybe with good intentions, but without full appreciation for what the practical implication of that's going to be and how it's going to work in individual communities. You know, I don't believe in statewide mandates coming from Boston into our local towns to tell them what they have to do. I definitely would be taking a collaborative approach with the individual towns to see what works for them specifically. And I mean, I was on Nantucket recently myself speaking with, you know, local leaders, and housing obviously is one of their biggest concerns. They didn't seem to think the Affordable Homes Act was going to solve those things. So, you know, I think the state really needs to work harder to incentivize development that works for individual communities. You know, what works in Barnstable isn't going to work for Nantucket, isn't going to work for Provincetown. Each community knows what's best for its own population. So I definitely would like to see more incentivization from the state rather than, you know, punishing communities that don't meet statewide standards. You know, it doesn't affect us on the Cape at this moment, but like the MBTA Communities Act, there's a lot of pushback on that across the state. Again, when you have this mandate coming from Boston forcing communities to do things that don't work for their population, you know, that doesn't solve the problem.
Thank you. Joe Vaness, same question.
Well, I have a slightly different approach to solving the housing crisis. As a farmer, I understand the importance of cyclical problem-solving solutions. So what is the problem behind the problem? We have a fluctuation, a mass fluctuation of people coming into the district, but I see more of an issue with people leaving the district, people I went to school with growing up as a kid, high school, families that have been here for generations. People are leaving because we're not being allowed to build what we want to build. I tend to agree with Christopher a little bit on this one, but I think what we need are, less bureaucracy telling us how to live our lives. We need loopholes for the little guy. Everybody knows that loopholes are being taken advantage of by huge corporations, and especially in the housing market. I mean, it applies in the housing market in the sense that it's easy to use a large amount of capital to get whatever you want done and push through, all right? But when neighbors are sitting on a couple acres and they're not allowed to build what they want, because we're being dictated housing styles from top down from bureaucrats who aren't even, you know, looking at your property or you know, let alone being able to visit the area. What we need to do is loosen up restrictions so that families that have been here can build what they want, how they want, and maybe make a little income in doing so. I mean, what we're looking at is 10, 20 years from now, a future where there are no Cape and Islanders left on the Cape and Island. It's just going to be, people are scared of these, damn foreigners or whatever, but it's the people from Connecticut, the suburbs, the city slickers coming in and taking our land.
Right. Your time is up, but thank you, Joe.
If I may, I want to respond to this, right? Yep. Because Chris talked about increasing taxes. We haven't increased taxes. We've actually lowered taxes by $1 billion. The Affordable Homes Act, in many ways, is not a mandate, particularly the seasonal communities designation. Folks have been getting this wrong. This is a toolkit of options that towns can deploy, right? So the town of Provincetown asked us for the ability to have year-round deed restrictions. You can do that. If Chatham doesn't want to do that, they can use that. But I think Chris said the Affordable Homes Act won't solve the housing crisis on Nantucket. You're right, because we didn't get a transfer fee done, right? And so not supporting a transfer fee, which Chris does not support, is a real rebuke to Islanders and people on the Outer Cape. You know, hundreds of Islanders traveled to Beacon Hill to make the case on this. So the Affordable Homes Act, look, is a start. I want to be clear that seasonal communities is not a mandate as it's being distorted. But really, we have work to do here. But it's in part coming up with a revenue source, asking those folks who are purchasing multi-million-dollar mansions to pay a small fee to solve housing is something that Cape Codders and Islanders want.
Chris, you want to refer to, how do you feel about the transfer fee?
Yeah, I'm against it. And, the problem with these sorts of things in my mind is maybe it starts on these multi-million dollar mansions, but then it trickles down to lower priced housing as well. So, I don't support increasing taxes to solve any of these problems. The state does not have a revenue problem. It has a spending problem. We don't need to continue taxing the population more.
All right. We're going to start with you this time, Chris. Where do you see opportunity for economic growth in the district?
Certainly all across the district, we have opportunities for small businesses to continue to grow the local economy if they can get relief from the state, and this is what I'm talking about with statewide mandates. And we have, on local small businesses, continued burdens. I think we need to streamline a lot of processes on the state level so that there's less of a burden on our local businesses, not only in a tax sense, but a regulatory sense. I'm a mechanic in a small family business. There's a lot of regulations that go along with that. And I think it can be very difficult for people to start a business like that. We've been there for 45 years, same location, like I said, third generation. But anyone trying to start a business like that, it's very difficult in today's world with the state's policies. It really disincentivizes local businesses where we're at right now. So I'd like to see that change on the state level. Reduce regulations, reduce the tax burden, help our small businesses create more jobs. Because as it is right now, our small businesses create 3 out of 4 new jobs. So that's the biggest driver of our local economy. We need to continue to incentivize that entrepreneurship. And again, in a way that works for each individual community. Hyannis obviously is more industrialized than places like Chatham and the Vineyard. But each town has potential to expand those businesses.
Thank you. Jill Vaness, same question.
I think this is very closely related to the housing issue in the sense that the businesses that are being promoted are reliant on resources coming in from far away, in the sense that, you know, the restaurant business is huge in our district, but it seems to be every single one of those is racing to see who can sell the most high fructose corn syrup and canola oil. They are reliant on a centralized food supply at a time when small farms, like everyone thinks of the farm as 40 acres and a mule, but technology to create food on 1 or 2 acres has substantially increased over the last 30 years. We have no-till practices. We have sustainable practices that can allow for everybody with an acre to produce thousands of dollars worth of income just by learning how to farm the land, and in doing so, increase housing for the families that want to promote these practices. And we need to change the entire economic system of our community to encourage a decentralized food supply that can sustain us in a healthy way for generations to come.
Thank you. Julian?
Thanks, Mindy. Well, I mean, I agree with Joe. You cannot talk about economic development on Cape Cod without talking about housing, right? And the housing crisis has gotten so bad that businesses are having to provide housing for their workers, not just for those in the hospitality and tourism, like my family, you know, had a seasonal restaurant for 28 years. You know, we had housing for some of our seasonal workers. That's gone on here for 20, 30 years. But now, you know, when I hear the hospital CEO in Martha's Vineyard talking about how the hospital's building, you know, 40 plus units of housing for their workers, right? When I talk to employers, housing is the number one issue. But there's more that we can do. I've been a big champion of worker cooperatives, of employee ownership initiatives. We have actually some of the largest number of employee ownership opportunities or businesses here in Massachusetts. There's really significant federal tax advantages for that. It might be a good way to transition some of these, traditional family businesses to keep them in business, right? Because the value of our property, property is the most valuable as a single family home. Tourism's crucial. We're not getting our fair share. The state really, leaves tourism and folks in the tourism industry, families like mine. We don't fund this adequately. Blue economy, of course, we're in Woods Hole. This is a real opportunity for us. And then Cape Cod bridges, right? We're not going to have an economy here if we have a failure of one of these bridges. I'm really proud to have been part of the team who worked with our congressional delegation, worked with Governor Healey to secure a record number of money, I think $1.7 billion, to replace these bridges. I can assure you one thing. If Donald Trump becomes president, we are not going to get money for the Bourne Bridge, right? The Sagamore Bridge is going to be it. So those are among my priorities. I work very closely with a number of folks at the chamber, and I think we'll go on to the next question. But
yeah.
Thanks.
I'm going to stick with the economy with a question from a listener. And Joe, we're going to start with you this time. How do you plan to secure and increase funding for arts programs and initiatives? And what policies would you support to promote the growth of creative industries in our area?
I would like to see less bureaucracy involved in the creative processes that individual people have come up with for eons when it comes to creating an income for themselves. The main barrier is paperwork and forms and complying with local ordinances. And, there's a committee for a committee for a committee to just allow something like, you want to take people out for a sailboat ride and charge them money. You got to get all kinds of signatures just to be able to do what you want to do. And I think we need to vote out bureaucracy. We need, this is going to sound funny, but one of the reasons we have so much bureaucracy, at least on Martha's Vineyard, where I'm from, is town employees are required because the people being elected to positions are underpaid. So they don't want to do too much work. Like, too much work is being given to them that they don't want to do for free. So they form these committees that have to be given salaries to live in these areas. And it's creating a nightmare of bureaucracy that's becoming harder and harder to navigate. So we need to actually give more money to selectmen and people on the Board of Health and we need to give a working salary to elected officials so that they don't have to create bureaucracies to do the work that they're not being paid to do.
Thank you, Julian.
So I got first interested in public policy around looking at how do you support our creative economy. When I was a sophomore in college, had an internship at the Fine Arts Work Center and did a whole host of work looking at, this is in Provincetown, of course, looking at how do you sustain, the nation's oldest, longest, continuous artist colony, and have really worked, to champion support for organizations like the Massachusetts Cultural Council, which provides cultural facilities grants, which really helps support these vibrant entities in our region that are also pretty big employers, right? Nonprofits make up one of the most sizable employers in the state. On housing, we've really worked with arts-serving organizations who are again trying to figure out how do you ensure that creative people. And the people who are working in these larger creative institutions can afford to live here. And in the Affordable Homes Act, in our seasonal communities designation, towns are enabled to subsidize, provide housing for the creative industries, for artists and musicians. So this is a really important, crucial kind of part of our economy. And I think too often in our public policy, we'll be like, oh, well, like arts and culture, that's sort of nice to have, right? And that's deeply dismissive of what is a significant part of our economy. People come to Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket not just for our natural beauty, which we have in spades, and we've got to work hard to preserve and steward, but also for the people who make their lives here, right? That idiosyncratic, creative, kind of funky community that we've got, right? And so we've got to do everything we can to sustain this. And I've worked on that, every single year since I've been in office, really being trying to champion our creative economy.
Thank you. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, the art's very important. I mean, I'm an author myself, so I appreciate the work that goes into, writing and art creation and all of these things, and we definitely need to encourage that here on the Cape. Julian mentioned the provision of the Affordable Homes Act. I give a lot of criticism on some of these things, and, there are good things in that bill as well. I'm not in favor of these giant omnibus bills in general. But going back to the state spending problem, we have more than enough resources to help with these things. We need to look at where the state is spending our money. When you're spending billions of dollars on housing migrants, when you're spending four times as much as New Hampshire on building a mile of road, that needs to be looked at so we can more responsibly spend that money and move that money into better avenues for the communities. I'm on the finance committee in the town of Barnstable. Chapter 70 is the education funding, and on it, I mean, the arts start in our schools. Our kids learn that in the schools. They participate in music programs, art programs, so getting adequate funding for our school systems is very important to promulgate the arts. And the Chapter 70 funding for the upcoming fiscal year in Barnstable, significantly lower than what our estimate was a year ago. And that's a direct result of the way the state is misspending money right now. So very much in favor of looking at where the state is spending money, making cuts where we can. There's a lot of cuts that can be made, and reallocating those resources towards better venues.
Thank you. We are talking with the candidates running for State Senate in the Cape and Islands District. 866-999-4626 is our number. We ask that it be an issue-oriented question addressed to all the candidates. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are hearing from the candidates running for State Senate in the Cape and Islands District. They are Julian Sear, Christopher Lozon, and Joe Van Ness. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Elaine is calling from Hyannis. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I was curious about two issues. One was how much money was spent on housing the migrants. And the other thing is, do they believe that the governor should release the data on vetting the migrants?
All right, Elaine, thank you for the question. Julian, you're first.
Thank you, Elaine, for the question. This has been, I think what you're talking about when you talk about housing the migrants, I think you're talking about state funding for what's called the Emergency Assistance Shelter Program, or the EA program. This is a program that's been in place gosh, I think it's before some of us were born in 1984, that provides housing for families with small children, families who have someone who's pregnant, to make sure that we don't have families sleeping on the street. That program has been at capacity for years. I had multiple conversations and worked on this issue with Secretary Mary Lou Sutter's, Charlie Baker's Health and Human Services Secretary, about this issue several years ago. And it's really been driven by two factors or capacity. One is the housing crisis, which we've talked about. The second is the arrival of a number of migrants to Massachusetts. Most of these folks are Haitians. They're coming to Massachusetts because we have a pretty sizable Haitian diaspora here. Massachusetts has the third largest Haitian diaspora in the country. And these are folks who are here legally. They have legal status to be in the country. If you have legal status to be in the country, then you're eligible for the EA program. And that has been a remarkably costly problem, something that I've not been happy about, $1 billion in costs, something that in the legislature we have been working in real time to rein in. We put a number of more stringent rules and criteria. And there's actually a there's a commission, and there is data that's already required to be released. I don't have it at the tip of my fingers. Glad to follow up and get it to you. But we have taken action here to address this. But this is a really big problem, and I think is going to continue to be a big challenge for us across this country as we see instability, as we see climate refugees.
All right, thank you, Christopher.
Yeah, so this is a serious problem. I hear it from people every day. You know, in Massachusetts here, we have a right to shelter. We're the only state in the country with a right to shelter. Like Senator Sear said, it's been in place for 40 years now, and it never was facing the challenges that it's facing in recent years. There has been a sharp increase since Governor Healey took office of these migrants coming into the state and utilizing this program. And it was never intended for new arrivals to the state. It's always been for Massachusetts residents. And the senator has, you know, opposed efforts to amend the right to shelter to clarify that it's only for Massachusetts residents. This has cost us over $1 billion for housing in the past year. It's going to again in the next year. It's costing us $64 a day for food for every one of these individuals, transportation costs, healthcare costs, education costs. So it's stressing our systems all across the state. And now there's a home-based program where these migrants are being moved from the right to shelter into homes. And I have to push back on the idea that these are people coming here to stay with their families. If that was the case, they wouldn't be in these shelter systems. You know, community centers are being used as shelters in Roxbury. We had migrants in a hotel in Yarmouth last year. You know, so these are having impacts on our community. And again, it takes resources away from our citizens. And this is not coming from any sort of personal animus towards people coming to this state. I understand it. Massachusetts is a great place. We're generous people. We take care of our people here. But we have homeless Massachusetts residents living on the street, living in their cars, living in tents. We cannot continue taking in more people into the state, some of whom are here legally, some of whom are not. We've had a lot of illegal residents rounded up, even over on the islands recently, violent criminals, MS-13 gang member on Nantucket recently taken into custody. So some of these people are good, some of them are bad. The point is it's taking resources away from our people, and that needs to change.
Thank you. Joe?
Oh, man, it is crazy to me that at the same time that we have people leaving our community due to not being able to afford living here, we are funding the housing for people who are coming here from wherever they're coming from. But the question is, what is the problem behind the problem? We have a one-party system that is completely funded by BlackRock and Vanguard, and they pay for the Democrats, and they pay for the Republicans, and it's a uniparty. And what they do overseas is they destroy economies, they rape the land, they create situations where migrants are forced to flee from, and where else are they going to come but here? And not here as in the Cape and Islands, but this country. And you know, we're talking about the Cape and Islands. So it's hard to look at this problem on a national spectrum, but the problem is we have a one-party system that is funded by the banks, which are raping the resources of people from all over the world and creating a destabilized situation where there's nothing else for them to do but come here. So we need to stop voting for the uniparty at all costs. That's how we fix this problem.
All right, thank you. We're going to go to Carol, who's giving us a call. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work with Cape Cod Disabilities Network, and we serve more than 1,400 people with disabilities on the Cape Islands and South Coast. We employ 1,100 people. My question is, what have you accomplished for people with disabilities and direct support professionals, and what will you do if elected?
Thank you, Carol. Chris, your turn to go first.
Yeah, so obviously I'm not in an elected position, so I don't have experiencing, you know, passing laws or supporting legislation to help the disabled community. But, you know, I'm very supportive of that community. And I think, again, it comes down to resources. The state is not spending our resources in a wise way. So absolutely cutting costs where we can and reallocating those resources towards needed critical services in our communities. I mean, that's the first step with all of these issues. And, you know, I've spoken with some of the members of CORD and other, you know, local disability, you know, advocacy groups, and I certainly support their measures to increase programs for the community and increase resources. You know, there are a lot of local groups who are doing great things to supply medical equipment on loan to people who need it. And I think the state could have a much bigger role in supplying those, you know, materials, those resources to people who need them, deploy them as they're needed. And that's something that, again, it all comes down to funding. Everything we're talking about comes down to funding. So I think the state is being irresponsible right now with how it's spending money. And we need to reprioritize what we're doing in this state to help our local communities, especially our most vulnerable members. You know, the disabled community obviously requires more resources than most of the rest of us. So it's important that we prioritize that. And I will do so as the state senator.
Thank you. Joe Van Ness?
The issue of looking at the disabled community, if we try to solve this problem through bureaucracy, we tend to discuss it in terms of how can we help a charity case. The truth is we need to just look into our own backyards. We have a great agricultural tax law, 61A. It was created years ago when farms were looked at as 40 acres and a mule, right? They made this tax law to include people that had 8 acres or more. If we can rework this tax law to include properties of 1 acre, we can create a sustainable industry that is perfect for the disabled. Everybody with disabled family members who want to take advantage of an industry that will not look at your family members as a charity case should really be looking into changing 61A agricultural tax law. And you know, we need to come together as a community, and there's nothing more communal than farming.
Thank you. Julian.
Thank you, Carol, for the question. So Massachusetts has among the most robust social safety nets for persons living with disabilities in the country. We fund this robustly, and I've been, you know, part of the team that has specifically focused on making sure that we're paying the people who are working at organizations like Capabilities and Community Connections and the Latham Centers and others, folks working for the Department of Mental Health, paying them a living wage, right? And this has been a major push, and the Senate actually, you know, led the way on this. You know, we've also gotten creative in supporting organizations trying new initiatives. There's been a real approach around how do you meet the needs of people living, people who are autistic, people who are living with autism. I've supported organizations like Forward of the Rock in Dennis or Nauset Villages in Orleans. The Vineyard has a robust autism community as well. So I've really tried to focus on engaging with the organizations providing care. Of course, the biggest issue they talk about, of course, is housing, right? Housing for their workforce. You know, many of these people are just really making over minimum wage, and so that's been a piece we've worked hard on. The other place I've really focused has been on making sure that we're building up our workforce of the people who are providing these services. And one thing I'm very proud to have championed We were able to take $192 million in American Rescue Plan Act monies and direct that to bolstering our behavioral health, mental health workforce. That has meant tens of millions of dollars for loan repayment, scholarship, clinical supervision. I wrote the law on that. I led the way on that, right? So that's another example, I think, of my commitment on working on tough challenges facing Cape Codders and Islanders and the whole state.
Thank you. We're hearing from the candidates running for state senate in the Cape and Islands District, Julian Sear, Christopher Lozon, and Joe Van Ness. And we'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're hearing from the candidates running for state senate in the Cape and Islands District this morning, Julian Sear, Christopher Lozon, and Joe Van Ness. And our next caller is Richard, calling from Harwich. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
What's your question?
Hi, thanks for the call. I just have one question, possibly two, but the first question is, do you support Massachusetts being a sanctuary state? And really, a second question is, do you support a carbon tax? Thank you.
All right. Joe Van Ness, your turn to go first.
Let me start with the carbon tax. I don't think the people that are creating, I don't think the people creating a carbon tax are looking out for the planet at all. I think they're creating a situation where we will become more polluted, not less polluted. I'll give you an example. All these new diesel engines they're putting out, it's been like, I don't think we've gained a mile in fuel economy in the last 30 years. They're creating technology which seems to make the problem worse. Every time I hear climate change, I'm hearing it from people that fly around on jet airplanes. I'm hearing it from people who push chemicals around the world. I'm hearing it from the banks. I'm hearing it from BlackRock. I'm hearing it from Vanguard. I'm not seeing any solutions that actually empower people to live cleaner lives. So I'm very skeptical of any tax that's being put out to make the planet greener. I just don't think they're capable of even if they had our best interests at heart, I don't think they're capable of getting the job done.
Sanctuary state was the other one.
Oh, sanctuary state. Again, I think that comes down to we're creating a problem where people are leaving their homes, they're fleeing their homes to come to the United States because that is where the money is. If you want to avoid that situation from happening, we have to stop voting for Democrats and Republicans, which is just another, it's a synonym for BlackRock and Vanguard.
All right. Thank you. Julian.
Thank you. I want to be very crystal clear here. Massachusetts is not a sanctuary state. I did not file any legislation to make Massachusetts one, as has been alleged in this campaign. And let's be really clear. The gentleman around this table and my colleagues in the legislature, we don't have authority over immigration. This is a federal issue. The last time Congress took action on comprehensive immigration reform was 1986, the year I was born. And look, this has been a failure of both Democrats and Republicans at the federal level. And we really can't, I think, Chris, we were at a forum the other night, and I agree with you. You said we can't solve this. We're not at the federal level, right? I do also want to be clear that I think Democrats in this last year made major concessions to support pretty significant bipartisan legislation that the extremist elephants and the Republican Party and Donald Trump derailed, right? And so this is a really big problem. I think we need to be honest that this problem is only going to be getting worse as we see climate refugees, as we see greater instability in the world. We've got to tackle this. But if you want to tackle this issue, the state Senate is not the place that you have the authority to do that. You know, the other question is related to a carbon tax and climate change. We've got to figure out a way to get ourselves off of fossil fuels. We've been doing that here in Massachusetts quite well. I'm not sure I'm too keen on by carbon tax, people often mean sort of a gas tax or some sort of mechanism like that. I'm actually concerned that in the next coming decade, we're going to see a real decrease in receipts in the gas tax, right, as people are transitioning from gas vehicles to EVs. But we do have to figure out this transition. The legislature's done a lot of work on this, and we're going to be keeping working doggedly to get Massachusetts to net zero carbon emissions by 2050. We've got to do it.
Thank you. Christopher.
Yeah, so starting with the sanctuary state question, you know, Jillian and I said the same thing the other night, and we'll say the same thing again today. You know, the ultimate failure is on the federal level. So as a state senator, we cannot affect federal policy. You know, I will dispute something he said there about the recent immigration proposal in Congress. I mean, Elizabeth Warren voted against that bill, too. So, you know, it's not extremist Republicans who shut that down. But, you know, here on the state level, though, I mean, Senator, you have supported Senate Bill 1510, the so-called Safe Communities Act. This is sanctuary legislation for Massachusetts. You have not supported amending the right to shelter to solve the migrant crisis that's happening in this state right now. You know, the state can do things to solve this on the state level and the local level. We can't do anything about the federal problem in the state Senate, but we can change policies here in Massachusetts. And that's what I'll advocate for as the state senator. You know, giving benefits to people who are coming into the state as migrants, whether it be housing, licenses, you know, $64 a day for food. You know, all these things incentivize people to come into the state, and we need to stop that. As far as a carbon tax, you know, there's, again, a lot of policies that get put into place or are proposed that I think maybe are well-intentioned, and we're talking about climate change and trying to solve challenges that we're facing as a coastal community, certainly. I think there are a lot of well-intentioned policies, but they don't really work in the practical sense. You know, requirements to transition to electric vehicles. You know, again, I'm a mechanic. I don't have any problem with electric vehicles, but, you know, we can't be banning internal combustion on an arbitrary timeline. That's not going to solve the problem. It's not economically feasible or logistically feasible with our infrastructure and resources to build these cars. So I have a problem with implementing carbon taxes and things like that.
Can I?
I was going to first. Julian, did you want to respond? Did you want? Go ahead, Joe. You can go first.
Sure. Battery-operated vehicles, for example, there's nothing green about them. We're doing pit mining lithium with slave labor in Africa to provide green technologies. It doesn't make any sense. We're going backwards. As far as migration being a local issue, I mean a national issue, not a local one. To an extent, yes. But every time we elect a party member, every time we elect a Democrat or a Republican, we are giving power to the system that is creating the problem. So we need to change it. There's no such thing as voting for the lesser of two evils. That might have worked 30 years ago, but we've played that scenario out. It's a dead end. We need to stop.
Julie? Yeah, I would just say briefly, right, that keeping people off the streets actually saves our community's dollars, right? If we were not providing housing in some way for families with children, right, you would see these mass encampments that you're seeing in red and blue states across the country. You know, I also think that we have to look at what are the challenges that are facing Cape Codders and Islanders. I don't hear Cape Codders and Islanders challenging and asking me to work on federal immigration. I hear employers asking me to find workers for them. I hear employers eager to put immigrants to work, reliant on an increasing immigrant workforce. That's the only way to really power our economy. So I really feel this is a bit of a focus on a national issue that, as the state senator, you know, we've got limited ability to make some change here. I think change is really needed, and I agree with Joe and Chris that we got to change direction here.
All right, let's go to Ben, who's calling from Eastham. Hi, Ben.
Hey, I have a question. I'm a small business owner who grew up on the Lower Cape and graduated from Nauset High School. I understand firsthand the challenges of not only living on the Cape, but owning a business that's seasonal. So my question to you three are, what will you do to support small businesses, not only in a time that's post-COVID as, you know, we make a rebound, mm-hmm. but, you know, I think that the sentiment among small businesses is sometimes it's difficult to navigate through local and state regulations and rules, and there's never a playbook on how to be an entrepreneur.
All right. Thank you for the question, Ben. Julian, we're going to start with you. I'm going to give you a minute so that we have enough time for closing comments. Go ahead.
Sure. I do think there's some real challenges, you know, in a state where you have 351 distinct municipalities, each with their own zoning authority, each with their own health authority. Consistency, I think, is really key. And I hear from, you know, my friends in the service industry, I got two friends who are looking to sort of transition their sandwich shop to maybe provide some seats. And the headaches and the cost to do so, I think, is a real issue. I think Massachusetts really has to can look at providing kind of guidelines, streamlining. Many of these regulatory requirements are done at the county level in most states, not the local level. So I think that's one place. And then housing, right? If Ben can't find workers to keep his shop open, that's the challenge we hear from business time and again. I've been really proud to partner with, you know, the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce. You don't often hear the progressive state senator in a region saying the regional chamber of commerce is his most essential partner, right? But that's the approach that we've taken here on the Cape, and I think it's served us well.
All right, Christopher?
Yeah, so I'm glad to hear, you know, my opponent saying he wants to streamline requirements and regulations and things like that. I mean, I've been saying that all along. We need to help our local businesses, make it easier for people to run business in our communities. Because, again, 3 out of 4 new jobs are all local businesses. And, you know, the incumbent, I mean, the National Federation of Independent Business has given him a 29% rating on his legislative record. So, you know, I will be an advocate for small business. I run a small business. My family's been reliant on a small business for generations now in Hyannis, across the Cape. We do a lot to maintain that. I mean, that's what we need to do. And like my opponent said, housing is a big component of that moving forward because we need to house these workers. So it's all interconnected. There's a lot of things the state can do to help that, but we're short on time.
Thank you. Joe?
Removing bureaucratic regulations is huge. How do we do that? We need to pay our democratically elected officials a living wage so that they're less reliant on hiring teams of bureaucrats to do the legwork. This also goes back to the housing issue. People don't care if they're hiring immigrants or locals, right? So we need to figure out how to prevent so many locals from being forced to move out of the district. Again, just loosening up housing construction laws. People need to be able to build dwellings on their own land in a sustainable way.
Thank you. We're going to move into closing comments. Christopher Lowe's on your turn to go first.
Sure. Thank you, Mindy, and to the station for hosting us today. Thank you to all the listeners for their pertinent questions, and thank you to my opponents for being here with me, really presenting alternate visions for the future of the Cape and Islands. So I'm not a professional politician. Like I said, I'm a mechanic in a third-generation family business, father of 4 from 18 down to 5 years old, and a husband. You know, I really understand the challenges that everyone across the Cape and Islands is facing because I'm experiencing those as well. I wouldn't be able to live here if I hadn't purchased a home when I did, if I wasn't already established here. And unless we change directions in this state, my children, your children, and grandchildren will not be able to make a life here. And, you know, I believe it's time that Beacon Hill answers to the people, not the other way around. And as I visit communities all across the district, it's clear we've all been hit hard by inflation. We're working harder for less in our wallets. Grocery and utility bills and taxes continue to grow with no end in sight. And yet our politicians continue to spend and ask us for more of our hard-earned dollars, never thinking to give us a break on that. You know, my campaign's about helping the people of the district, not special interest groups, not lobbyists for big corporations, and not people who broke the laws to be here. We can make the Cape and Islands affordable again. We can have more money in our wallets. That's why I've developed a plan to lower the cost of living for us. That's why I will fight to amend the right to shelter, which has cost us billions. That's why I oppose offshore wind projects surrounding the Cape and Islands, which will raise utility costs and endanger our environment. As your next state senator, I'll make a positive difference for you. The challenges we're talking about and we're facing, they're not about right or left, but right or wrong. The incumbent's taking us in the wrong direction. You deserve better, and I will do better as your next state senator. I'd be honored to have your vote. Please visit votelozon.com to learn more. And thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Joe Van Ness.
The health of the community is dependent on the health of the individual. as a small farmer on Martha's Vineyard. I spent 10 years taking care of over 100 animals. I was not legally considered a farmer because I didn't meet the land requirements. We need to use Agricultural Tax Law 61A. We need to reduce that from 8 acres, which is the minimum requirement now, to 1 acre so that people can. I'll give you a great example. If you're in that tax code, it's $6 an acre. Your property tax is $6 an acre. So the field next to me, they grow corn at $6 an acre tax. I had 50 goats, 50 pigs, 30 chickens that I was rotationally grazing all over the island. But on my lot, that was 3.5 acres. So the field next to me was taxed $18. I was taxed $13,000. These tax laws can be amended so that everybody with an acre of land can now make money. And not that I'm trying to force some green revolution on the general population, but if you want to earn a sustainable living with green practices, these laws need to be amended. They were created to include everybody in a day when 8 acres seemed ridiculous. Nobody would attempt a farm with less than 8 acres back when this law was created. So they were supposed to be inclusive, and they need to be amended now so that they can do what they were created to do.
Thank you, Julian.
Thank you, Mindy, and to the listeners of CAI and to Joe and Chris for this good, healthy debate. I'm a lifelong Cape Codder, and I've been serving as your state senator since 2016. I have been laser focused on solving the big problems that Cape Codders and Islanders face. And I have a track record of success despite, you know, currents of it being harder and harder, you know, to make a life here. I've not only prioritized housing, but I've gotten results in the Affordable Homes Act and in bringing the tools our communities are clamoring for to solve this crisis. I authored with Sarah Peake the Cape Cod and Islands Water Protection Fund. To date, this has generated $204 million in other people's money to subsidize wastewater projects. It's big money, $33 million for Barnstable, Chris's hometown, $25 million for Yarmouth. We tripled the septic tax credit to $18,000. I authored a good landlord property tax exemption to incentivize year-round rentals. We raised the estate tax to $2 million, doubled the child and family tax credit, brought free community college. I got a stable revenue stream for police training. I've taken on and been leading the way on forever chemicals, on stewarding our fragile environment, authored one of the most significant mental health laws in a generation, and worked to restore abortion access to Hyannis and broad abortion services to the islands for the very first time. I have been working doggedly with everyone, with Democrats, Republicans, Independents, even my former opponent from 2018, John Flores, he's supporting me, right? Because of, I think, the approach that I bring to this work. Look, you don't have to take it from me. Visit juliansear.com. We put out a monthly newsletter. You can track every single thing we're doing. Really grateful for the opportunity to serve, the opportunity to run again. And I humbly ask for your vote on November 5th.
Thank you, Julian Sear, Christopher Lozon, and Joe Van Ness. Thank you all for being here this morning and letting candidates know where you stand on the issues. If you missed any of it, you can catch it on our website, capeandislands.org. And then again this evening, 7 p.m., we'll have the debate for U.S. Senate between Elizabeth Warren and John Deaton. We hope you can join us then. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.